Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends and colleagues. I'm happy to be here and happy to be able to address you with some thoughts and views from Ukraine's civil society. I'm always delighted to have this opportunity to talk about Ukraine's civil society, but this time is very special, and let me begin by saying thank you all for your interest in Ukraine. It's very important for us to know that you care. I'm very glad to be in this panel chaired by Nadia from the National Endowment for Democracy, which has been a supporter of Ukraine's civil society institutions for so many years. And my words of thanks also go to other organizers of this distinguished event and to Adrian from Freedom House. So there were supposed to be many more of us, representatives of Ukraine's civil society institutions, here on this panel today. They all regret they couldn't come, but believe me, they have a very good reason to stay in Ukraine, and their involvement there is very important. So I will try to mention what they have done as well as what we all have done together. Our panel is called Successes and Failures of Civil Society of Ukraine. So let me start with successes, perhaps. Just enumerate those which I think are the most significant in the current context. So success number one, that's first and foremost, we do have civil society. This was still a question for many a couple of years ago, so it's not a question anymore, and I think this is a very good thing. Ukrainian civil society has managed to organize itself, unite, mobilize itself, engage in the process of monitoring of transparency of the electoral process, of disseminating information in a very difficult situation where the media were not quite able to serve this function. And most of all, Ukrainian civil society, and I'm not talking only about NGOs or political parties or institutionalized actors of civil society, managed to tell Ukrainians once again that they have human dignity and they have to stand for their human dignity and protect their choice. And this, I think, is a great success. It was also very significant for younger people. Professor Bruchowiecki managed the younger generation, and I was really happy that many young Ukrainians, probably for the first time in their lives, were proud to be Ukrainians, to be part of the nation and part of the joint effort. For them, it's a very significant lesson of democracy, which I hope they will not forget. Success number two, which I would like to point to, is the growth in volunteer movement and grassroots initiatives. People who never cared about things like civil society and who were quite skeptical when they were told about democracy now realized their voice matters, their help also matters, and I was really happy to see so many people who had nothing to do with politics before to get engaged in the process. We mentioned before the role the small and medium businesses played. We also could speak about the role of local communities, of local self-governance bodies, which also showed to people that people do not live in oblasts. If you remember those calls for separatism, they were all made at the regional level by regional leaders, mainly by regional level of oblasts. But people do not live in oblasts, they live in communities, and they understand that their role in those community matters, and this growth in grassroots initiatives is really something which is encouraging. So the third point in terms of successes could probably be voter education and mobilization initiatives, and I am very happy to mention them here because we as an institution, as Europe 21 Foundation, were involved in co-founding one of them. This is the I Know campaign, which is Znaju, I Know, and the whole purpose was to make people aware of the voting procedure and make them alert about possible violations of the process. And it was very encouraging to get phone calls to our helpline from hundreds of people who volunteered, who offered their help, who said that they noticed some violations and they wanted to report them. So who wanted to help other people to know how to find themselves in voters' lists and do those other things. I'm sure that this voter education and mobilization campaign played a great role in encouraging people to try and defend their votes. We could mention a lot of other initiatives like PORA, like Maidan site, like monitoring initiatives in which hundreds of NGOs and non-NGOs, the grassroots groups, engaged trying to help observe the election process, not as official observers, but just as people who cared. So, and I think, again, this is a very good success. And another success story is already mentioned, it was already mentioned before, that the whole process was so peaceful and it was a demonstration of people who wanted to preserve a peaceful, dynamic, friendly, and forward-looking. So again, this is a very great success. So the next one, I would again specifically come back to this issue, that's the growing role of NGOs in political processes and electoral processes. Not just monitoring NGOs, though their role cannot be underestimated. Our colleagues from the New Choice 2004 coalition, primarily the Committee of Voters for Ukraine, whose leader unfortunately cannot be here with us today, and also other groups like a Kharkiv human rights group, also supported by the National Endowment for Democracy, and other human rights groups collected huge volume of pieces of evidence, which were then used by the Supreme Court when the Supreme Court was to decide how to regard the elections in Ukraine. Again, thousands of domestic observers also came from the NGO movements. Again, we can mention the Committee of Voters of Ukraine and other institutions. So the next piece of success, I think it's a very important one, that's the change in the media and attitudes of journalists to their duties, their professional duty, and to the very notion of freedom of expression and freedom of speech. I think it was very important that the country finally started getting proper news programs, which provided objective, real coverage of what was going on. And the very change in attitudes of leading journalists was a very significant signal they sent to all of their colleagues, and we were very happy for them and applauded them. We could go on for ages listing what we have done so wonderful and what has been done so wonderful, but what about the second part of our theme today, failures? Are there any failures? Aren't we so too optimistic with how we regard the situation today? Perhaps emotionally, I cannot talk about failures now, because for me, failures is something which is the end. So we failed, and that's it. So perhaps I would probably rather talk about risks, which are present, and it's very important to be aware of them. So we may say it's a victory, but the victory is not given for granted, and it's not preserved just because it was so wonderful and people were so happy about it. We were talking earlier today with Dr. Sher about attitudes, you asked me whether I'm optimistic, so it's both optimistic and worried, so things we are worried about. So, number one, civil society institutions still remain rather weak in terms of their capacity and outreach. They've made too many sustainable systemic effort to strengthen the impact of civil society on the policy-making process and actually bring a new quality of policy-making process to Ukraine. A lot will have to be done at all levels, from the community level to the level of leading think tanks which engage in the policy formulation process. So it would be really important for them not to lose the momentum not to waste this very positive potential and to be able to build on that and strengthen civil society impact. So the next risk is that there doesn't seem to be a plan in any part of the participants of the process. So it's all nice, it's very positive, it's very dynamic, but sometimes it's very important to make sure it is also consistent. So for civil society institutions, the risk is still not to develop such a plan for the next weeks and months. So we may say what will be happening, say, in 5 years or 10 years, but it's very important to also plan short-term and see what the immediate actions which are necessary. So the immediate actions would, be strengthening the monitoring and voter education efforts before the round of the presidential elections on the 26th of December, and making sure that the violations which occurred during the first and particularly the second round are no longer possible. So, the next risk is not directly related to civil society institutions, but it will depend a lot on civil society institutions on how that risk is mitigated. I'm speaking about the divided society, which we've mentioned. So, the next president will really have, and the next government will have a lot of efforts to put into reuniting the society and the political elites and other elites in the country. So civil society institutions can and should play a very strong role. So the risk for them would be to not to be able to play that role. So where to from now? Again, as I mentioned before, that's the short-term tasks of trying to contribute as much as possible to as free and fair elections as possible on the 26th of December, and the days beyond, which will be needed, perhaps, to see how the votes are counted this time. So for the medium to longer term, civil society institutions will have this challenge of being suitable for their role in helping transform the positive energy which exists now into an effective public-private dialogue. It's something new in Ukraine, and I'm sure this time we've got a very good opportunity to start and develop it. I mentioned the think tanks, because I belong to the think tank community myself. I think it's very important for think tanks now to try and engage effectively and professionally in defining Ukraine's policy agenda, and also in discussing solutions for the looming problems and the potential crisis which we may be facing, primarily in the field of social security policy, which is linked to the populist steps somebody mentioned before, done during the pre-election campaign. So now it's very important to find a solution which would be acceptable to the society, which would be market-oriented, reform-oriented, but still which would not cause huge credibility risks to the new government. So the next thing, and I would probably end with this, so the action plan on for government, for civil society institutions on how to hold the next government accountable. Even the government elected or the president elected in the most democratic manner will still probably need this pushes and kicks from the civil society, and it's very important for any civil society to be alert and let any government aware of the fact that its every action is being carefully watched by constructive critics who civil society organizations are. Thank you.